Okay, so today we're going to do Ashtanga Marga. And Ashtanga Marga is a very sophisticated transit system, you know, predicting events and predicting things about the person based on transits. And there's really nothing else like it anywhere in the world. It's just so unique. And it's just so intricate and well thought out. It's just a really, really profound system. And it's considered a simple system. In the introduction to Ashtanga Marga, in Brihat Parashara, Parashara says that, you know, with all the contradictions we see in the birth chart, it's even difficult for rishis like Narada and Vasishta to make accurate predictions, not to mention a mortal in Kali Yuga who's dumb to boot. And just to emphasize how hard it is. And he said to make the whole process simpler, Ashtanga Marga is an easier system that doesn't have all the contradictions. So he says this is the simple astrology. And the techniques are much more simple, a lot more clear-cut, cut and dried. However, where it gets sophisticated is knowing all the things about the planets. So the key to using Ashtanga Marga well, same as the key to using any part of Vedic astrology well, that's knowing your basics, knowing what Jupiter represents, knowing the qualities of Venus, knowing how Mercury operates. So we really, really need to know what the planets really are like really, really well to do Ashtanga Marga well. Otherwise, a lot of times we'll hit a dead-end street. We have to know our karaka as well. We have to know the meanings of the bhava as well. So with Ashtanga Marga, it's basics that are really, really everything. So and that's really true with any system of astrology. The more you understand your basics, the more things you know that Jupiter rules and which houses rule those things and so on, the better you're going to be with any system, and particularly with Ashtanga Marga. And the reason I say particularly with Ashtanga Marga, because with Ashtanga Marga, we don't use the Marga charts. With, you know, other dashas and buktis and everything, we constantly can resort to those Vargas. So if we see something really significant going on in the Navamsha, we pretty much can count on that thing revolving around relationship. However, with Ashtanga Marga, if we see something happening to Jupiter, we have to know our basics to know what exactly is happening to Jupiter, you know, what Jupiter is a karaka for, and so on. So we really have to know our basics well. That's the harder part about Ashtanga Marga. Otherwise, it's pretty simple. So if everyone just opens up their kala and just opens up a chart for right now in Yucca Valley, California. Just open up Colin, open up a chart to right now in Yucca Valley.
My chart to Yucca Valley.
Yeah, any chart. Open up a chart. Just click new, file new, and put Yucca Valley, California, 9:07 a.m. Okay. Yeah. And once everyone has that, let's just all make sure we're with the same Ayanamsha so we don't get confused. If everyone goes to your options and your Ayanamsha options and select the second one from the top, which is Dhruva Galactic Center, Middle of Mula. And that should give you a Gemini Lagna with Mars and Saturn in Cancer. What? I have 28 for some reason. Yeah. We're just going to do Vedic. Uh-huh.
Valley,
California.
San Bernardino area?
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
We don't have to have the right ascending degree. As long as we have Gemini rising and Mars and Saturn in the second, then we know we're on the same page. The degree of the rising sign is not going to make any difference. Where do you, what degree do you have Mars? Oh, that's correct. Maybe you clicked on a different Yucca Valley in California or something, but that's okay. It'll work.
What IMF did you use, guys?
The second one, the Dhruva Galactic Center, middle of Mula. Okay. So, when you have a transit up here, let's say there's a transit in Aries. Let's just pretend Jupiter's transit in Aries. So Jupiter in Aries means lots of things. First, it means that it's in the 11th house from the ascendant. It's in the 12th house from the Sun and Mercury. It's in the 2nd house from Venus. It would be in the 3rd house from the Moon, the 7th house from Jupiter, and the 10th house from Mars and Saturn. So the effect that Jupiter's going to have as it goes through Aries is going to be all those effects. It's going to have an effect from all 8 of those places. It's not just going to have an effect from the Lagna. It's not just going to have an effect from the Moon. It's going to have an effect from all 8 of those places. And that's basically what Ashtakavarga is. It lets us judge the effect of a planet in transit considered from all 8 of those places, the 7 planets plus the Lagna. And that's why it's called Ashtakavarga, because Ashtaka means consisting of 8, and Varga means like divisions or portions or parts. So it's because we're considering the placement of the transit from 8 different places that it's called an Ashtakavarga. And some of you took the Gochara class, and the Gochara class basically only takes the planet from the Moon. Okay, it only takes the position of the planet from the Moon. Well, if you took that class or you know that technique, you know that a certain planet is in, considered in favorable places in certain houses from the Moon, and in other houses from the Moon, it's unfavorable. And that's exactly what Ashtakavarga does. Each planet is considered to be favorable in certain houses from a planet, and unfavorable in certain houses from other planets. And that lets us basically see the transit effect. So that's what we're doing. So for now, let's go to the screens, and then go to your Ashtakavarga screen. So on this screen, you're going to have 9 tables, one for each of the planets, one for the Lagna, and then something called the Sarva table, which means the whole table, the entire table. We'll ignore that table today. And what these tables represent, they basically represent the... basically, these are the places where the planets are auspicious and inauspicious. So if we go to the Moon's Ashtakavarga, which is that one in the middle top where it has the Moon in the upper left-hand corner, and this means that the Moon is going to be transiting from, like, the Moon transiting through these places is going to be good or bad. So if we look at the Moon transiting in respect to Saturn, well, when the Moon's in Taurus, it'll be favorable from Saturn's point of view. When it's in Virgo, it'll be favorable from its point of view, and that's why it has the number 1 there. When it's in Scorpio, Sagittarius, it'll also be favorable from Saturn. So this means when Moon's in those houses, it'll be favorable from Saturn's point of view. And then when it's transiting through Aries, Taurus, Cancer, Leo, Libra, Scorpio, and Capricorn, it'll be favorable transiting from Jupiter's position. So basically, we do that from all 8 places, the 7 planets and the ascendant, to come up with the Ashtaka number, which is that first number on the bottom part, where under the Moon, for Aries, it gives 4. For Taurus, it gives 5. For Gemini, it gives 1. For Cancer, it gives 5. For Leo, it gives 5. And so on. So that basically means that when the Moon's transiting Leo for this chart, it's going to be good in 5 places out of a possible 8. Okay, remember there's 8 places the moon's transit is considered from, and that number just shows how many places it's good in from all the planets combined. Oh, just go to screens, Ashtaka Varga.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Okay, 8 is the maximum points you can have. So 4 is 50-50. 4 is the medium. 5, 6, 7, 8 gets better and better. Okay, so 4 is the middle ground. 1, 2, 3 is low. 5, 6, 5, 6, 7, 8 are good. 4 is... when it's 4, it's 50-50, basically. Once it hits 5, it gets better than 50-50. Okay? So in this chart, you'll see in the moon, under the Ashtaka, you'll see that the lowest place for the moon is Gemini. So when the moon's in Gemini every month, that would be the period where the moon would be most troublesome in transit for this person. And when it's in Scorpio, where it gets 8 points, that's where the moon would be most favorable in transit for this person. Okay? And Prasher says that the Ashtaka Varga is more important than the Gochara. So if the Ashtaka Varga is 5 or better, that planet's going to be good in that sign regardless of where it's at in the Gochara, for those of you who took the Gochara. So he does consider Ashtaka Varga to be a more precise measurement because it considers the ascendant and all 7 planets and not just the moon. The Gochara is just 1/8 of Ashtaka Varga, really. It's just the moon's part of Ashtaka Varga. So, does everyone have a basic idea of what the Ashtaka Varga calculation is? That's really the base calculation, is that a planet transiting certain signs from other planets is going to be effective or auspicious, and certain other signs it'll be inauspicious. And we just find out, you know, what those signs are and how much points each planet will give in each sign as it transits. So it's pretty simple, the bottom line calculation. Go ahead.
I understand the bottom number, where, depending on what Rashi they're in, but what I don't get is the other planet on the left there. What is that?
Okay.
According to the moon.
Okay. So under Saturn's row, when the moon's in the, wherever there's a number 1, that's auspicious. The zeros are inauspicious, okay? So when the moon's going through Taurus, Virgo, Scorpio, or Sagittarius, it'll be favorable from Saturn, okay? When the moon's in Aries, Taurus, Cancer, Leo, Libra, Scorpio, or Capricorn, it's in a favorable position from Jupiter, okay? And if you look down to Mars, under Mars's row, under the moon's Ashtaka Varga, when the moon is in Aries, Taurus, Leo, Virgo, Scorpio, Sagittarius, or Pisces, it's going to be in a favorable position from Mars. So it's just, that's just showing us the favorable positions that the moon is in from each planet. And then we add up all those ones to get the final number. So under Aries' column, if we add up the one that the moon gets by Jupiter, the one that the moon gets by Mars, the one that the moon gets from the moon, and the one that the moon gets from the Lagna, we get the number 4. Does that make sense?
Yes, everything.
Okay. So those numbers are, those other things are there for some finer divisions of Ashtaka Varga. We're not going to worry about that today, but there's a practical reason we have, you know, it broken down for each planet. But today the number we're going to largely concentrate on is that Ashtaka number, which means how many points out of 8 does the planet get in each sign. Okay? So the most auspicious sign for the moon to transit through is going to be Scorpio, and the most inauspicious sign for the moon is going to be Gemini. Then if we go like to the sun's Ashtaka Varga, we'll see that the most auspicious sign is going to be Leo, Aquarius, and Pisces, both of which the sun gets 6 points towards. And the most inauspicious signs will be Gemini and Sagittarius, of which the sun gets 2 points. Okay? If we go to Saturn's Ashtaka Varga, we'll see that the most auspicious placement for Saturn is going to be 5 points going through Sagittarius. Does everyone see that? And the most inauspicious place for Saturn is going to be Cancer and Libra, both with the transit point of 1. So when Saturn goes through Cancer or Libra in this chart, it's going to get 1 out of 8 good points, which means it gives 7 out of 8 bad points. So it'll give 7 to 8 trouble in Cancer and Libra and 1/8 good. So whenever a planet is running through a sign with low points, it's always going to give us a lot of trouble to that sign. Okay? Does everyone understand that? You mean if there's a zero to a sign? Yes, and what that means is, okay, if we pull up the Rashi chart, right, you can right-click on the screen and then pull up a small Rashi chart, a floating window Rashi chart. And there you'll see the chart again with Saturn and Mars and Cancer there. Okay, Saturn's in Cancer, and the fact that it says zero under Aries just means that when Saturn's in Aries, it's not going to be good from Saturn. So Saturn in Aries is in the 10th from Cancer, right? Where Saturn is in the birth chart. So Saturn in the birth chart's in Cancer, and Aries is the 10th from Cancer. So what that zero is saying that Saturn transiting the 10th from Saturn is not good. Then it gives a point for Taurus, which means Saturn transiting the 11th from Saturn is good. Then Gemini gives 0 points, which means Saturn transiting the 12th from Saturn is unfavorable. Then Cancer gets 0 points, which means Saturn transiting the Saturn sign is unfavorable. Then Saturn in Leo gives 0 points, which means Saturn in the second house from Leo, from itself, the second from Cancer, where Saturn's placed, is unfavorable. Then Virgo, Saturn gives 1 point, which means that Saturn in the third from Saturn gives a point, is favorable. In Libra, Saturn's in the fourth from Cancer, from where Saturn is, and that's unfavorable. So Saturn in the fourth from Saturn's bad. Saturn in the 5th from Saturn, which is Scorpio, is good. And Saturn in the 6th from Saturn, which is Sagittarius, is good. And then Saturn in the 7th, 8th, and 9th from Saturn is unfavorable. That's Capricorn, Aquarius, and Pisces. So that's all that's showing. Ashtaka Varga basically just determines what houses from a particular planet, a transiting planet, is happy in. And this is an important thing. Like, for instance, the moon, Saturn transiting from the moon. So if we go down to the moon there, okay, you see the moon? Down there, the Saturn gives a point in Aries, a point in Cancer, and a point in Sagittarius, right? So the moon itself is in Aquarius. So Aries is the third from Aquarius, right? And so the moon, Saturn gets a point in Aries from the moon, which means that Saturn gets a point in the third house from the moon. Then it gives a point in Cancer, which is the sixth house from the moon. Then it gives a point in Sagittarius, which is the 11th house from the moon. So this lets us see that Saturn is favorable in the third, sixth, and 11th transiting from the moon. And that's exactly what Gochara says, that Saturn is favorable in the third, sixth, and 11th from the moon. Now, Saturn, everyone has heard of your 7-year Saturn period, right? That's when Saturn's in the 1st, 2nd, and 12th from the moon. Or the 12th, 1st, and 2nd, however you want to read it. Well, the 12th from the moon in this chart is Capricorn, right? And the 1st from the moon is Aquarius, and the 2nd from the moon is Pisces. And if we go to the moon, we see that Capricorn, Aquarius, and Pisces all give 0 points, which means Saturn's unfavorable in Capricorn, Aquarius, and Pisces transiting from the moon. And that's, you know, that's a 7-year Saturn period. Some is, you know, that's considered to be a tough time, and the reason is because Saturn's not given any points from the moon. He might actually be good in other respects. Like if you look at this chart, Saturn in Pisces gives 4 points out of a possible 8, so he's really not that terrible in Pisces. Saturn in Aquarius gives 4 points, so he's really not that bad. Saturn in Capricorn gives a total of 2 points, though. So Saturn in Capricorn would actually be very difficult, but Saturn in Aquarius and Pisces would just be so-so, just mediocrely normal Saturn transit. So, and again, Ashtaka Varga, looking at it from all the planets, is considered more important than just looking at it from the moon. But so from the moon, Saturn's bad in the first, 12th, and second house. That's the 7.5-year Saturn period. Now, some astrologers take that idea and they say, well, if Saturn's bad from the moon in those positions, it must also be bad from those positions from the sun and the lagna. Because the three lagnas in the chart are the moon lagna, the sun lagna, and the lagna lagna, right? So they'll say, well, Saturn has to be bad in transit in the second, 12th, and first from all three lagnas, not just the moon. And so if they see Saturn in those houses from your lagna or sun, they'll also worry about you. But that's not exactly true. If we look at Ashtaka Varga and we go to the lagna, or excuse me, we look at Saturn in Saturn's Ashtaka Varga and we go to the lagna, which is, let's find out what's if it's bad in the first, second, and 12th. The first house from the lagna is Gemini, the second is Cancer, and the 12th is Taurus. So what does Saturn give for Taurus, Gemini, and Cancer? Well, for Taurus, it gives a 0. So Saturn is bad in the 12th house from the lagna in transit. Gemini gives a 1, though. So Saturn transiting the lagna is actually considered favorable from the lagna. Then Saturn transiting Cancer is the second house of the lagna is unfavorable. So Saturn's only bad in the second and 12th from the lagna, not in the lagna itself. Whereas from the moon, Saturn's bad in all three. Then from the sun, if we go to Saturn and then go to the sun there, the sun's in Taurus, so Aries is the 12th from Taurus, Taurus is the first from the sun, and Gemini is the second from the sun. So Aries, Taurus, and Gemini, if we go to the sun's row, under Saturn's Ashtaka Varga, we get under Aries, Saturn gives a 0. So Saturn's unfavorable in the 12th from the sun, but in the house of the sun, it's favorable. In Taurus, it gives a point. And in the second house from the sun, it's favorable and gives a point. So Saturn actually is favorable transiting the house of the sun and the house second from the sun. Okay, so that's basically what Ashtaka Varga does, but the important thing is that it adds it all up and gives us a final number. If you look under Saturn's Ashtaka Varga here, we see in Sagittarius, it's the most favorable, it gives 5 points. So that's going to be the best Saturn transit is through Sagittarius. And the worst Saturn transit is going to be Cancer and Libra. The Saturn transit through Cancer and Libra, in fact, is going to be much more difficult than Saturn transiting through the 12th house from the moon, the house of the moon, or the second house from the moon. It's going to be, you know, Cancer and Libra is going to be the worst places for Saturn to transit. So the Ashtaka Varga just takes a little bit more of an accurate, holistic look at the transits instead of just looking at them from the moon. Excuse me. Does everyone understand that idea? Okay, good. So that's what Ashtaka Varga is. It's those numbers from 0 to 8. 1 through 4 is considered medium, okay? 0, 1, 2, 3 is considered bad. 5, 6, 7, 8 is considered good. And 4 is sort of so-so, okay? So ideally you want to get over 4. And different planets will get more points. Like Jupiter will tend to have more than 4 points possibly in every sign because Jupiter has more points to offer. Whereas Saturn, you know, You'll rarely find Saturn having, four more than a couple times, a few times. It'll have lots of lower numbers. And the reason that is certain planets are favorable in transit for many planets. Like Jupiter's favorable in transit for most planets. Venus is favorable in transit for most planets. Saturn's unfavorable in transit for most planets, so he just naturally has lower points. Okay, and that's why Saturn transits are harder. So, all right, so that's Ashtaka Varga. So what you want to know right now, whenever you want to look at a planet transiting a sign, to find out how good or bad that sign is, you look at that number. So for this chart, if Jupiter's transiting Aries, we go to Jupiter's Ashtaka Varga, and we see under Aries, the Ashtaka is 4 points. So Jupiter through Aries will be so-so. It won't be nearly as good as Jupiter through Leo or Jupiter through Sagittarius, which gives 6 points. Okay? All right. So let's click on Jupiter's... If you look, anytime you see something underlined in the yellow box in Kala, that means it's a link. So click on Jupiter in the upper left-hand corner of Jupiter's Ashtaka Varga box, and a window will pop up. Does everyone have that window? It says Jupiter's Ashtaka Varga. Okay, so this is what we're going to learn how to use today. And I'm just going to be sort of brief and give you guys the idea. Uh-huh. Just click on Jupiter. Okay. So this is a table that has a lot of calculations for Ashtaka Varga to use it more effectively, okay? The first thing is each planet has what's called important ages dependent upon the Ashtaka Varga. So in the upper right-hand corner of this table, we have important ages for Jupiter. The Bindus, it says Bindus and Lagna to Jupiter 24. Bindus and Jupiter Lagna 42. Combined Bindus 66. So what this is, we add up all the Bindus, which are the points, the number one. We add up all those numbers in the ascendant to Jupiter. So in this chart, Jupiter, if I remember right, was in Libra. So we add up all the points in Jupiter's Ashtaka Varga of Gemini, Cancer, Leo, Virgo, and Libra, and that will give us 24. And so that age, 24, becomes an important age in the context of Jupiter. So in the context of things that Jupiter represents, which are children, wealth, philosophy, knowledge, that could be an important age for those types of things. So it's simply an important age for Jupiter. Then we add up all the points counting from Jupiter to the ascendant, and we would get 42, which means that that's also an important age for Jupiterian type things. And then we add up both those amount of points, and we get 66, which lets us know that 66 will also be an important age for Jupiter. So these are the three important ages for Jupiter, where Jupiterian things could be of greater importance to the person somehow. So, those are always ages to pay attention to. The classical texts tell us to pay the most attention to Saturn's ages. So if we click on Saturn's Ashtaka Varga, we get Bindus and Lagna to Saturn 4, which means during the age of 4, the person can have Saturnian experiences. And the old books say the person can have, could physically die, could have illnesses, and there's lots of suffering. So age of 4 could be a Saturnian year, hard year. 39,
Are you referring to that current age, or?
The age when that person's that age.
So a person is 0, or they're 1, or they're 2?
No, when they're...
Start with 0?
Whatever number is in the Bindus in Lagna to Saturn. Okay, 4. Okay, I see what you're saying. The first year of life is from 0 to 1. So 4 means from the age of 3 to 4. Okay, so in Jupiter's age of 24 that we just looked at, That doesn't mean when they turn 24, things are going to get bad. Because when they turn 24, that means you've finished 24 years and you're starting the 25th year. So 24 means that between the age of 23 and 24 that year. Okay? Okay, they're simply adding up all the points in the Ashtakavarga Saturn between the Ascendant and Saturn. So, if we go to Saturn's Ashtakavarga, and we add up the points in Descendant's Gemini, right? So if we go under Gemini in Saturn's Ashtakavarga, we get 3, right? And then the Saturn's in Cancer, and Cancer gives 1, right? So 3 plus 1 is 4. So then we add up the Bindus in Saturn to Lagna. Well, Saturn's in Cancer gives 1 point, right? No, under Saturn Ashtaka. We're not going to use those Lagna numbers. We're only going to use the Ashtaka number from now on, okay? So if you look under the Ashtaka number under Saturn for Cancer, we get 1, right? Yeah, go to Saturn's Ashtaka bar, go to the lower left corner, and go to the Cancer column, and go down to the Ashtaka, and you'll see the number 1. You see that? Okay, so Saturn in Cancer gives 1 point, and Descendant to Gemini, right? So we have to count all the points between Cancer to Gemini, and then when we do that, we'll get 39. So 1, which is Cancer, plus 4, which is Leo, is 5, plus 4, which is Virgo, is 9, plus 1, which is Libra, is 10, plus 4, which is Scorpio, is 14, plus 5, which is Sagittarius, is 19, plus 2, which is Capricorn, is 21, plus 4 for Aquarius, is 25, plus 4 for Pisces, is 29, plus 4 for Aries, is 33, plus 4 for Taurus is 36, plus 4 for Gemini is 39. And that's why in Bindus, in Saturn to Lagna, we get 39. So that's how we're finding out these ages. So the ages of 4 and 39 would be ages where there could be Saturnian experiences to this person. And then the combined Bindus are 43, so also the age of 43. So you can real quickly as a snapshot prediction to see which planets are going to be significant, just look at those ages. So if you click on all those boxes and all the planets, if you click on Venus, important ages for Jupiter, for Venus, for instance, it gives 42, 21, and 63. So if the person's 21 years, you know, between the age of 20 and 21, then you know you're going to have to look, take a good look at Venus, because Venusian issues will be significant to that person at that time. Yeah.
I may be jumping ahead here, but the important ages for any planet, is that primarily as a karaka, or does it include all their houses and things?
Primarily as a karaka. Most Ashtakavarga stuff is based on a planet as a karaka. Good question. Okay. So that's what those important ages are. And again, you have to understand your planets and your karaka ships to understand, you know, how to use the planet. But of course, Venus is a planet of love and romance and making important choices. So the age of 42, 21, and 63 for this person would all be important ages for the person to make choices that will help him pursue his most intimate needs, okay? And so that's what those important ages are. It's pretty simple. Okay, then we have the auspicious direction. In each Ashtakavarga, we'll have auspicious directions. And that's at the bottom of the Ashtakavarga. So let's keep Venus's Ashtakavarga up. It says, under auspicious directions, the place indicated by the directions, west and southeast, indicated by the Rashis, Libra and Pisces, having more Bindus in Venus's Ashtakavarga, is favorable for getting married, to have the bedroom in the house, and to secure a bride from that direction. So, if we go to Venus's Ashtakavarga, we see under Aries it gives 5. Under Taurus it gives 5. Under Gemini it gives 5. Does everyone see that? Under Libra it gives 6. Under Pisces it gives 6. So those are the signs that have the most points are Libra and Pisces. So that tells us that we'll have the most luck with Venus, with Venetian type things, marriage, bedroom, those types of things, if we do those things in the direction of the signs Libra and Pisces. Okay, so this is sort of like a feng shui vastu type idea that based on the Ashtakavarga, we can find out the best place to have the room. So this for this person, the bedroom would be, that they sleep in would be best in the west or the southeast, which are the directions of Libra and Pisces. Because those are the points that those are the signs that have the most points. So the directions associated with those points are going to be the best places for having the bedroom. Is that pretty simple, right? Does anyone not get that idea? Okay, if we go to, say, Mars's Ashtakavarga, click on Mars. Auspicious directions, it says, a visit to an army chief, work connected with lands and gold, wealth, welfare, and conducting homas will prove favorable if they are situated in the directions north, indicated by Cancer. Having the largest number of bindus in the Ashtakavarga of Mars. Then the native should have the kitchen in the place of worship to Kartikeya located in that direction in his house. The enemies living in that direction can be subdued easily. So, if we look at Mars's Ashtakavarga, we see that the sign that has the most points is Cancer, right? Cancer represents the north. Therefore, having martial things such as fire, the kitchen, the machine shop, any type of martial thing in the direction of Cancer and north will prove more auspicious for the person. Yep.
Yeah. It really would be possible to move in certain
directions from an enemy to overcome you? Supposedly, yes. The direction you attack from all has a real big bearing on the outcome of the battle. They have lots of omenology based on that. Like, if you're facing east or west, depending on the direction you're facing, and depending on this, on whether you see the omen on your left or right, or if your left or right nostril's clear, and depending on the direction the enemy's facing, all determines the outcome of the battle. So, and even in Muhurta, the direction that you're approaching the enemy is very important for determining your Muhurta. So yeah, it does seem like direction has a base on it. The energy is, you know, the powerful energy is coming from a particular direction, and that direction is going to be the more likely victorious direction as a result. Uh-huh.
So, if Mars, we could say Mars kind of rules enemies?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then, if Mars is the ruler of your sixth house, would that be a good thing?
Well,
if he's situated...
Okay, Mars rules, as a Karaka, Mars rules us fighting our enemies, our ability to fight our enemies.
Uh-huh.
If it's the sixth lord, it specifically rules our enemies. Okay, so it depends whether it's good or bad, depends how strong Mars is as a Karaka.
Uh-huh.
If it's strong as a Karaka, you'll better be able to overcome your enemies.
Right.
But if it's strong as a Bava lord, you'll more readily lose to your enemies. So you want Mars strong as a Karaka and weak as a, if it's a sixth Bhava Lord, weak as a sixth Bhava Lord.
Okay.
Okay.
Aaron,
yeah?
I have a question. What is the
name Mars? Okay. That's something else. Okay. We haven't got there.
Oh.
Okay. So basically every planet represents something in our house, something in our life, and we're going to have better luck with that thing if we keep it in certain directions. And the directions are based in the sign that has the most points. It's important that you understand how we're breaking up the directions here. In Vedic astrology, there's two systems of directions. One system is that the fire signs rule the east, the water signs rule the north, the earth signs rule the south, and the air signs rule the west. So Aries, Leo, Sagittarius all rule east. Libra, Gemini, and Aquarius all rule west, and so on. So that's one system of direction. Then there's another system of directions that's based more like a compass. And in that system of direction, Aries and Taurus both rule the east. So Aries and Taurus both rule the east. Gemini rules the northeast. Cancer and Leo rule the north. Virgo rules the northwest. Scorpio and Libra rule the west. Then Sagittarius rules the southwest. And then Capricorn and Aquarius rule the south, and Pisces rules the southeast, okay? Now, the way that system works, it's based on the movement of the sun. And basically, when the sun is the most furthest north in the heavens, it tends to be in Leo and Cancer and Leo. Okay, like right now, the sun is moving further north all the time, and when it's at, on June 21st, it'll be the most furthest north, and that's Cancer. So Cancer and Leo are considered north. Then when the sun is the most furthest south in the middle of winter, when it's nice and cold because the sun is south and far away, at that point, the sun is in Capricorn and Aquarius more. So that's based on that idea, that based on where the sun is, the signs relevant to that position are given these directions. And each sign is 30 degrees. So east is Aries and Taurus, which means east is 60 degrees. And if you pull up a Rashi chart, everyone should pull up a South Indian Rashi chart. If you have yours set to North Indian, just push your F2 key, and it'll change your color to South Indian. Okay? The South Indian chart is based on these directions. So, anytime you see a chart, what we call north and the west, the upward direction, in India that's always east. And north is on the left. Whereas we always put north on the top and east on the right. In India they always put north on the east. On the left, I'm sorry, and east on the top. So Aries and Taurus are east. Cancer and Leo are north. Libra and Scorpio are west, which is opposite Aries and Taurus. And then Capricorn and Aquarius are south. And then the dual signs, Gemini, Virgo, Sag, and Pisces, are the intermediary signs. So this North Indian chart is actually based on these directions. So east is Aries and Taurus, which means 60 degrees is east. Okay, it's not that, if we break up 360 degrees, a circle, and we break it up into eight parts, we get 45 degree parts, right? Yeah, we'll get 45 degree sections. But when we do the directions, we don't break it up into 45 degree sections. Each direction is not 45 degrees. The cardinal directions, east, south, west, and north, those directions all get 60 degrees. And the intermediary directions, the northeast, the southeast, the southwest, and the northwest, those only get 30 degrees. So the way you'd want to do this, if you have the North Indian chart, you imagine the center of your house is the center of the chart. Okay, and then the 60 degrees directly in front of east, that's all considered east. And then the 60 degrees to the right is considered the north. And in between the east and north, there's a 30 degree piece of north, of northeast, okay? And so that's how you divide your housing or your living space into these eight directions but not each direction having 45 degrees of the circle. You know, the cardinal directions each having 60 degrees of the circle, and the other directions have, the intermediary directions is having 30 degrees of a circle. And so by putting your possessions there, putting your wealth, storing your money, anything of value in the direction that Jupiter is giving the most points will be auspicious. So under Jupiter's Ashtaka Varga, in this chart, the highest points are Leo and Sagittarius. Well, Leo is north, and Sagittarius is southwest. So if the person stored their wealth in the southwest or the north, or stored anything that made them money, their inventory, if they're a farmer, their livestock, whatever it is that makes their money, that would help them become wealthy. Someone had a question?
Yes. When you're looking at the chart and you have your home in the center, where would your entrance be?
Okay. Well, it depends what direction your entrance is, right?
Okay. So it would matter, like if your entrance is on the south side of a compass?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Then it would be your chart.
Okay, the entrance you could look at based on where the lagna is. So the, like in this person's chart, the lagna gives 7 points in Aries, which means it'd probably be most favorable for this person to have the lagna, in, you know, to have the entrance in Aries, which is the east.
The lagna should be the entrance.
Yeah, so look at the lagna as being the entrance.
Okay.
Okay, and another thing is, east is 60 degrees, 30 degrees for Aries and 30 degrees for Taurus. So the first half of east is Aries and the second half of east is Taurus. So in this case, you would want the ascendant to be in the first half of east, or the opening, the entrance to the house in the first half of the east, not so much the second half of the east. Okay, so we are dividing where each sign gets 30 degrees of the circle, and you just draw out your floor plan based on that circle. You'll just plot a circle around your floor plan from the center of the house, and then you can see where everything falls into. And to give you a better idea, go to the screens and then go to the prajna. And once you get to the prajna, go to the select aruda. Yeah. So screens, prajna. And on the bottom right, click the button that says Select Aruda. Under Screens, your Screens menu. There's a Screens menu on your file bar. Okay, you found that? Then go to the Ashtaka Varga, or the Prajna, I'm sorry. And then select the Aruda button, which is on the bottom right. Okay, so here we've got basically the same idea. We also use this idea in Prajna a lot. Here we've got a circle divided into 12 portions. And the upper two are Aries and Taurus, okay? So you would want to put a circle like this with the center of the circle in the middle of your floor plan, and just let the lines radiate out from the center and cut your house into 12 portions, each of those portions being 30 degrees of space. And Aries and Taurus would be 60 degrees of space. That would be considered the eastern space. But how you want to look at it, you just want to say, well, I want my ascendant, I want my door to be in the Aries part of my floor plan. So it's easier, rather than working on directions, it's actually easier to simply divide your house up into Aries through Pisces, and then just make sure you have the right stuff in the right sign. Okay? And one other thing as well.
Aries
is on the top.
So top left.
Top left. And how you want to do it is due east. Straight east is the middle of Aries and Taurus, right? So the Aries-Taurus junction is directly east. Then the directly north is the Cancer-Leo junction. So basically, You just find those, you know, all you need to do is find direct east of your home on your floor plan, and that'll be the intersection of Aries and Taurus, and then you just plot the 30 degree arcs around it, and then you're set. Now the problem is, let's see, let me remember. Yeah, it's just like this this chart. It's just like the Rashi chart. Okay, but when you do your house, of course, you have to do it in the right direction, right? You have to plot basically what you want to do. Hi, Aja. What you want to do is plot, just find due east in your floor plan, okay, and plot that as the middle of Aries and Taurus. Then find due north and plot that as the middle of north, or, you know, find due north and make that the middle of Cancer and Leo. Then find due south and make that the middle of Capricorn and Aquarius. And just do that once, it'll all come together. Okay, there's only one way it'll work because you're dealing with real direction. So just do that and plot it out and it'll make sense. The one thing you have to be careful of, it's hard to find due east. You can't use a compass. Okay? A compass is not going to show due east exactly because the magnetic pole is not the north pole. You know, the compass points to the magnetic north pole, which is always some degrees removed from the north pole. So the better way to find the due north, the perfect due north is to just go to the internet and get a satellite photo of your house. And the satellite photos are always orientated in the cardinal direction. So that way you could find how your house is relevant to the cardinal directions. Ideally, your house will be perpendicular to the north, south, east, west axis. It's not considered auspicious to have your house orientated at an angle to the cardinal directions or your plot of land. So after you plot, after you find out your due north, you'll easily be able to plot the signs into your floor plan and then figure out where you have your things, okay? Okay, yeah, you could look at Polaris, and that will be relatively accurate right now. Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. In the old days, what they used to do, they would, at sunrise, they would mark a line where the sun rose, and at sunset, they'd mark the shadow of the sun when it set. Then they'd connect those points, and that would be the east-west line. So they actually it took a day to figure out what direction you were perfectly aligned to. So there's a couple ways to do it. But yeah, that's a good direction. That works pretty good right now. Just check out Polaris, and that'll give you it within a few degrees, which is going to be accurate enough. No, it'll work on any day, actually. Yeah, so it'll be more north or south on certain days. But the sun will be the same far north when it rises as it sets, right? So that line will still be, you know, the east, proper east-west line. Okay. All right, so that's another feature of Ashtakavari. It lets us kind of plan our housing direction. And, you know, it can be effective. You know, if you keep your valuables in that direction, they do, like under Jupiter's Ashtakavarga, it says if you keep your chattel, your valuables, your wealth, your gold, your vehicles, because vehicles are considered to have a value in the direction of Jupiter's highest sign, that they'll multiply. You'll get more and more of them. And I've seen that work really well. So this is sort of the Ashtakavarga Vastu. Okay, and it's kind of nice because it's different for everybody, so you could play around with your house and see what kind of results you get. Okay? Yeah. Yeah, root and logarithm is always the same degree as the logarithm. No, the root of log is only for Prajna. It has nothing to do with Ashtakavarga. Okay? Yeah. So you, in Ashtakavarga, you use the full solid direction. I just wanted to show you that wheel to give you an idea to draw a wheel in order to come up with your stuff. Okay? All right. So one of the fun things of Ashtakavarga is the direction, finding the meaningful directions. And what you'll want to do later is click on each of your nine planets and just read what direction each planet sort of is ideally for. It's basically whatever that planet's a karaka for, it'll be, you'll get good results in that direction. And if you're in a direction, if you're doing that thing in a direction, like say your kitchen is in the direction where Mars is giving 1 or 2 points, then cooking is not going to really go that smoothly. You won't cook much, or when you do cook, then you'll burn the food or have problems, who knows what. So, you know, so that's how you want to just look at it. Whatever the planet's a karaka for, it'll be good for you to do activities relevant to that planet in those directions, okay?
You said that you have your house state one of the cardinal, in other words, the door face one of the cardinal directions. But what is your better planet, like Jupiter, happens to be northwest, northeast, or, you know, one of these?
Yeah. Okay, that's okay. I should say, what if your front door is supposed to face in a opposing, you know, the highest place? That's a good question. Vastu basically says we definitely want our house orientated towards the cardinal directions. And a lot of the things you'll come up with Ashtakavarga are going to be different with than Vastu's. Vastu is more this house works for everybody, whereas Ashtakavarga is, this house will work for you, but it may not work for somebody else the way it's set up. So if the best direction for your entrance is northwest, then it would be okay to have a house that's orientated not to the cardinal directions. But I think you're probably going to have a better house if you have it orientated to the cardinal directions and have the door in the direction that gets the most points. You know, the door in the cardinal direction that gets the most points. Yeah, then lost times becomes a compromise. Yeah. Yeah, you bet. Lost times it becomes a compromise where you try to figure out the direction where you get the most points together to do a, to have the kitchen, you know? So you just work out the best possible compromise based on your floor plan. That wouldn't be a bad idea to research, to cast a composite chart, and then do an Ashtakavarga, calculate the Ashtakavarga from the composite chart and see what you come up with together as a couple. You could do that, huh? I haven't tried it, but that would be a good thing to research with it and see how well it works. Okay. Then if we click on, say, Jupiter's Ashtakavarga again, I'm really not going to get into this, but I'll just answer Marlona's question really quick. The classical books basically give, this is the effects of Jupiter based on the amount of points he's with. So it says Jupiter's effects due to natal position. The association of Jupiter with 5 bindus indicates destruction of enemies and success in undertakings. So in, if we go to Jupiter's Ashtakavarga, well, remember, Jupiter is in Libra in this person's chart, right? If you don't remember, just take a quick peek at the chart. And you'll see that Jupiter's in Libra. Gives 5 points in Libra. So if you go to Jupiter's Ashtakavarga under Libra, you get 5 points. And 5 points is Jupiter having five, being in a sign where he gets 5 points, is going to create a certain result. And that result is indicates destruction of enemies and success in undertakings. So that Jupiter is supposed to be make a person capable of destroying their enemies and having success with their undertaking. Again, whenever classical results give like a result, it's rarely going to be exactly what happens. It just gives you an idea. But the basic idea is, if a planet's in a sign where it gets more than 4 points, that planet becomes more auspicious for the person. And if a planet is in a sign with less than 4 points, it gets less auspicious for the person. There's a lot of subtlety to use that correctly and to make it meaningful. It gets pretty involved. There's a lot of involved subtleties to Ashtaka Varga, which we're just not going to have time to cover today. I'm just giving you the basic techniques so you can start working with them. So I'm not going to get into that any more than that. But basically, any planet is going to be in a sign, and in its own Ashtaka Varga, it's going to have a certain amount of points in that sign. And that will give a reflection on that planet's strength. So that's basically the Ashtaka Varga strength of that planet. But to use that correctly requires a lot of subtlety, and it gets pretty difficult in the sense of juggling more numbers. And so we don't have time to really get into it too much. Okay, the one thing, the main thing I wanted to teach you all, which we're going to have just enough time to get into, is let's again click on Jupiter's Ashtaka Varga. In the middle, we have the important transit places for Rashis from Jupiter. And then we have on the top, we have Bhava from Jupiter. So we have Aries, Taurus, we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and so on through 12. Those are the Bhavas as counted from Jupiter. So the 1 means the first Bhava from Jupiter. The 2 means the second Bhava from Jupiter. 3 means third Bhava from Jupiter, because we're looking at Jupiter's Ashtaka Varga. So each planet is a karaka of many things. So Jupiter's a karaka of income. It's the karaka of wealth. It's the karaka of children. It's the karaka of guru. Those are like some of the main karaka ships. And for women, it's the karaka of the husband's well-being. So Jupiter, you know, produces all those things, but he does it through different houses. So the house of wealth is the second house. Therefore, the second from Jupiter represents wealth. The seventh house represents the spouse. Therefore, the seventh from Jupiter represents the spouse. The ninth represents the guru, therefore the ninth from Jupiter represents the guru. The 11th house represents income, therefore the 11th house from Jupiter represents income. So the house from the karaka is always a pertinent house. Does everyone understand that idea? And again, this is a part of the fundamental aspects of astrology, that the more you learn about, the better you'll do Ashtaka Varga. So whenever you look at a karaka, you have to study the karaka, but you also need to study the different house from the karaka. And so with Ashtaka Varga, we're basically studying the transit influences to the different houses from the karaka in order to come up with results of what those transits are going to do. Okay, so for instance, let's just work with the second house from Jupiter, because that's a big one. That's wealth. Jupiter's wealth, therefore the second house, which is wealth, the second house from Jupiter represents wealth. Now this person's chart, Jupiter's in Libra, right? So the second house from Jupiter is Scorpio. But that's not what we're doing now. The second house from Jupiter is Scorpio, so Scorpio will be an important house in the context of wealth for that person, but not in the context of Ashtaka Varga. With Ashtaka Varga, we do something a lot more tricky. What we do is, you'll notice on the upper left, there's something that says Graha Pinda, Rashi Pinda, and Yoga Pinda, right? Pinda means points. Graha means planets. So the first number, 33, the Graha Pinda means the planetary points. The second number means the Rashi points, which is 85. And when we add those two together, we get the Yoga Pinda. And it's the Yoga Pinda that's important. Okay? How we arrive at that point is we do some really difficult, not difficult, we do some, you know, somewhat involved calculations to arrive at those points. And those points are based on the Ashtakavarga of the planet, the sign that Ashtakavarga falls in, and any planets that may be falling in that sign. And based on those things, we arrive at these very, you know, precise amount of points. And these points are very important. So the important number we want to use is the Yoga Pinda number. You know, at some point in the future, we'll have a really thorough 12-week Ashtakavarga class and get into every nuance and subtlety. Today, we're just kind of showing you what techniques are available that you can start working with because the software does all the calculations for you. So basically, we take this Yoga Pinda point and then we multiply it times the amount of points in Jupiter's Ashtakavarga for the second from Jupiter. So Jupiter's in Libra, right? The second from Jupiter is Scorpio. And if you go to Jupiter's Ashtaka, you see that Scorpio gives 5 points, right? Does everyone see that? Okay, it gives 5 points. So when we multiply 5 times 118 is basically what we do. What's that? You got it already? 5 times 118 equals 590. So we take 590, we divide it by 12, which is the amount of signs in the zodiac. We get 43 remainder. Remainder 2. Okay, it's the remainder that's important. Remainder 2 means Taurus. That's why in the important transit places for Rashis from Jupiter, for the second from Jupiter, we get Taurus, which means that Taurus is a sensitive point for the indications that would be read out from the second from Jupiter. The second from Jupiter is notably wealth. So Taurus in this person's chart is a sensitive Rashi for planets to transit through in the context of wealth. And any planet transiting through Taurus is going to have a more significant effect on the person's wealth. Does everyone get that idea? So Ashtakavarga gives this pretty mathematically centered way to come up with the sensitive Rashis for each of the planets from each of the from each of the houses. Either way, it means sensitive. Meaning a planet through Taurus for this person's chart is going to have an effect on their wealth. Because wealth is the second from Jupiter, right?
And is that in that, so we see Rashi under 2 in that table?
Yep, under Rashi under 2 you see Taurus, right? So Taurus is going to be a significant transit place for wealth. Any planet transiting Taurus is going to have an influence for good or ill on the person's wealth. Income. Yeah, that's 3 would be the third house from Jupiter, right?
And so anything transiting Pisces would affect their
No, because the third from Mars is competition, right?
So the third from Jupiter is.
Third from Jupiter could be like publishing. So I had good transits through my third from Jupiter when I published my first book, when I finished up my first book.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, the 11th from Jupiter is Pisces, which means transits through Pisces are going to stimulate the income because the 11th from Jupiter is your income, right? Planets in Cancer. What's that? Because in the second house from Jupiter, which is Scorpio, In Jupiter's Ashtaka Varga, we have 5 points. And then we divide it by 12 and take the remainder. And that gives us the sign, the transit of which, you know, the planet through that sign will stimulate that indication. So Jupiter through Taurus is going to affect the first from Jupiter, or a transit in Taurus. Any planet moving through Taurus is going to stimulate the first from Taurus, the first from Jupiter, the second from Jupiter, the fourth from Jupiter, the ninth from Jupiter, and the tenth from Jupiter. Because all those are sensitive relevant to Taurus. So the second from Jupiter is easy, it's wealth, right? The fourth from Jupiter is banks. So I used to open my business bank account, for instance, when significant transits were in my sign that's relevant to the fourth from Jupiter, which is banks. Then the ninth from Jupiter, which is also affected by Taurus, would be one's philosophy or guru. The first from Jupiter, what's the karaka of the first from Jupiter? Well, the first from Jupiter, Jupiter, one of Jupiter's names is Jiva, which means life and living. And a person's career in Sanskrit is what they live by. It's also considered their Jiva, it's what they live by. So Jupiter sort of is our destiny, has an influence on our destiny, our path, that provides us with what we need to live. So the planet transiting Taurus, the first from Jupiter, would orientate the person towards their life's purpose. So, of course, there's going to be more bread and butter positions, like the second from Jupiter, the fifth from Jupiter, which is children, the ninth from Jupiter, which is guru and philosophy, the 11th from Jupiter, which is income, are going to be the more significant Jupiter transit. But the more karakas you learn, you'll learn that every planet has a karakaship. So the sixth from Jupiter has to do with forgiveness. Okay? And so on. So, but as you learn more karakas and more houses associated with the karakas, you'll be able to again predict more with Ashtaka Varga. But everyone here by now knows the basic things. Jupiter's children, the fifth house is children. Therefore, the fifth house from Jupiter will be significant for children, which is stimulated by Cancer. So any planets transiting Cancer will affect this person's children. So each planet as it transits...
I have a quick question.
Uh-huh.
How do you see in your graph where the Rashi change and graph in numbers?
That's right. If you click on the yellow button on the Ashtaka Varga screen, it'll pop up, and a table will pop up that has the Graha Pinda and the Rashi Pinda.
Oh, thank you so much.
Sure.
In Earth, when you cast one sign or two signs, start with the sign that the planet is in, right?
Yes, when you find out those points, yeah.
Thank you.
When you find the points, the Ashtaka points, with which to multiply the Yoga Pinda, you just count as the planet being in house one. So this lets us see all these sensitive placements. So a planet transiting is going to have, every planet transiting is going to have some effect, but a different type of effect. Saturn and Jupiter transits are where you want to start at, because they're the slow-moving planets of destiny. And both Saturn and Jupiter's purpose is to orientate us towards our destiny. Jupiter does it by making us more more looking towards it, more idealistic towards it, you know, seeking it and, you know, searching for it with happiness. Saturn sort of orientates us to our destiny by sort of showing us that this is our duty that we have to do. Jupiter's our destiny that we want to do, that we're excited about doing. Saturn's our destiny that we have to do. But they both really are orientating us towards our destiny. So, but they're felt very differently. Jupiter... any sign Jupiter's in will tend to open us up to vaster possibilities relevant to those sensitive signs. So Jupiter in Taurus, transiting Taurus for this person, would open them up to more possibilities of wealth and also to more career possibilities, first house, and more banking possibilities, fourth house, and more guru philosophical guru and philosophical possibilities. So Jupiter makes us open and expands our life in that direction. Saturn, on the other hand, contracts us and closes our life off so that the path becomes very narrow and sort of forces us down the road that we have to take. Okay? Now, Saturn's usually experienced with more difficulty, but either planet could give a good or bad result. So Saturn transiting Taurus could be good for wealth, or it could be bad for the person's wealth. Jupiter transiting Taurus could be good for wealth, or it could be bad for wealth. How do you know? You know, in either case, Jupiter or Saturn going through Saturn will set the person's destiny for their wealth. But will that be a destiny that's going an up destiny or a down destiny, right? Because destiny is not always good. You have your bad fate, where destiny says it's a time in your life when you're going to make less money and have less in the bank, or it's a time in your life where you're going to have more in the bank. And again, it depends on the Ashtakavari to see what's going to happen. So, let's assume for this person that Jupiter is transiting Taurus. Okay? And we know that Jupiter transiting Taurus is going to have an effect on their wealth. How good is the effect going to be? To find out how good the effect is, we go back to the beginning and find out how good is Taurus for wealth. Or how good is Taurus for Jupiter? So if we go to Jupiter's Ashtakavarg on the middle of your screen, and you go to Taurus, you're going to get 4 points for Ashtakavarga. So Jupiter through Taurus gives 4 points, which means Jupiter and Taurus is so-so. So Jupiter and Taurus will sort of be a so-so financial destiny for this person. It'll be enough, but it won't be as much as they could possibly achieve. But it won't leave them suffering either. So how much the transit's going to give is based on that. Now, if we go to Saturn's Ashtakavarga, and under Taurus, Saturn's only given 3 points. So on Saturn's table on the bottom left, we see that Saturn's giving 3 points out of a possible 8. So Saturn in Taurus is not a real great transit. And it's going to be a transit where the person is going to have some less wealth, where they're going to be struggling a little more financially. Okay? Does that make sense to everyone? So we qualify the transit based on the points the transiting planet gets in that sign. And then we find the sensitive points based on the yoga pinda to find these sensitive points for the different houses from each graha. Pretty simple, right? No, the more points it has, the better. If Saturn through Taurus gave 6 points, it would really rock their wealth. Now, how will it increase their wealth, right? It'll increase their wealth, but it'll do it because of forcing duty upon them. So they have to accept some duty, some obligation that they really don't want to, but life imposes it upon them. As a result, but it also gives them lots of wealth, even though it's not what they would do if they had the choice. So Saturn always imposes our destiny upon us, but that destiny may have a lot of good fringe benefits if Saturn is giving high points through that particular sign.
Okay, so high point is
more than 4. It increases whatever is ruled by that sensitive point. Okay? Uh-huh.
Just got an example. It gives 5 points in dash.
Yeah.
That's the strongest house, the strongest sign. But when we go look at the sensitive point, it doesn't show up there.
It might not show up, you're right. It'll show up, it might not show up in Jupiter's Ashtakavarga, but it'll probably show up in somebody else's Ashtakavarga, right? Okay, meaning it's not showing up in Jupiter's Ashtakavarga, but it might be showing up in Venus's Ashtakavarga. And it's not. Let's see if it's falling in anyone's Ashtakavarga. Hold on. Okay. You said it. Okay, you said it. You have no points in Sag, right? Or no, their Sag didn't come up. Well, did you? Yeah. In Sagittarius, yes. In the sense of points on whose chart? Okay, that's okay. That simply means that Saturn transiting through Sagittarius is not going to stimulate any of the houses from Saturn.
Oh, okay.
That's all it means.
Oh.
And you're going to find that there's going to always, and anyone, like in Jupiter's Ashtaka Varga, we saw that Taurus was lighting up four houses from Jupiter, right? And so, of course, somehow some signs will not light up any houses from that. Just depends how it works out mathematically. Okay? So Saturn is going to give 5 points to Sagittarius and stimulate whatever Sagittarius represents, the 5 points, for every planet, not just his own. Does that make sense? Okay. So if we say we wanted to look at real estate, real estate's ruled by Mars, right? So let's click on Mars' Ashtaka Varga. And on the Mars' Ashtaka Varga, we see that the fourth house for Mars is Sagittarius. Okay. So Saturn transiting the fourth house from Sagittarius would actually benefit, Saturn transiting Sagittarius, which is sensitive to the fourth house for Mars, would actually help this person with real estate matters. No, we don't care what Sagittarius has for Mars. We care what Sagittarius has for Saturn, because the transit we're considering is Saturn, right? We're looking at the sensitive points for Mars, but the transit of Saturn. So Saturn is going to give 5 points in Sagittarius from every planet. He gives 5 when he's in Sagittarius. So he's good in Sagittarius. What's he good for? Well, it depends on the sensitive points from all the other planets. He's good from the fourth from Mars, which is land. And how good is he? Well, how good is Saturn in Sagittarius? 5 points, right? Pretty much. Some, I got a 6 somewhere, and it has to do with my money, so I'm looking forward to that one. Always check the transiting planet's highest point sign. So a way you could do it, you could say, well, Saturn and Sagittarius, for 5 points, it's going to be my best period of Saturn, right? It's going to be the best part of my life in respect to Saturn transit. Saturn and Sagittarius. What's it good for, though, right? That's the next step.
And that's when you just go through each of the other planets,
and you can see which ones it's good for, right? Yeah, there's the big picture, too. Does everyone understand what we just did, though?
No.
Okay, who does it?
Margo.
Okay, what don't you understand?
I got confused when you went over to Mars.
Okay. Okay, we were talking about, I think it was, I don't know, Carl, right? If I'm not mistaken, who pointed out that, Saturn gives 5 points in Sagittarius, right?
Yes, I see that.
Okay. So that means when he goes to Sagittarius, he's going to help anything that's sensitive to Sagittarius. And we were just looking, what is Sagittarius good for? What is Sagittarius sensitive for? So I opened up Mars because Sagittarius was sensitive to Mars for the fourth house to Mars. So if you open up Mars, you'll see under 4, you get Sagittarius, right?
So, how did you choose Mars instead of
because I knew on this chart that Mars, Sagittarius, would stimulate the fourth for Mars.
So, aren't you mistaken to look at the Mars table and see that under Sag is only 1 point?
Exactly, because that's Mars transiting from Saturn.
Right.
And the most it'll be is 1 point, you know? So, yeah, to find out how good the transit is, you look at the planet Ashtaka Varga, which means that Ashtaka number. What? The transiting planet, Okay. So, we looked at Mars because I checked while we were all talking, I checked to find out something that Sagittarius was stimulating, and I saw that it was stimulating the fourth house from Mars, so that's why I said, let's pull up Mars. No other reason. Okay. So, right now, so big picture, because it's no fun. You can imagine it's not going to be any fun to open up 9 charts, find out which of those charts has to do with Sagittarius, and remember those charts and not forget them, right? That would be too much jumble. So if you right-click on your screen, and you can do this on any screen, right-click on your screen, and under the pop-ups, you'll get the Ashtaka Varga transit places. Click on that, and you'll get a big old thing. Okay, so here, let's assume that Saturn was transiting Sagittarius. Okay? So all we do under the sensitive Rashis for the Bhavas, under Sagittarius, under the row of Mars, we get 4, 5, 6, 9, and 12, right? Okay, 4, 5, 6, 9, and 12. That means Sagittarius is sensitive to the fourth house from Mars, the fifth house from Mars, the sixth house from Mars, the ninth house from Mars, and the 12th house from Mars. So Saturn transiting through those houses is going to be good for all those things. Now Saturn's good because it gives 5 points in Sagittarius, right? So Saturn's going to be good in Sagittarius. What's it going to be good for? The fourth from Mars, which is real estate, which will be the most significant one, right? Okay. The fifth from Mars, which is logic. So it'll be good through that. So let's say right now we know that Saturn is in... Saturn's cruising through Cancer, right? So looking at Cancer, we could see that Saturn's going to influence the 2nd, 8th, and 12th from the Sun, right? It's going to influence the 2nd, 3rd, 5th, and 8th from the Moon, the 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th from Jupiter, and the 3rd, 6th, 7th, 11th, and 12th from Cancer. So the transit of Saturn is going to revolve around those things most of all. So the 5th from Jupiter is children. The 8th from Jupiter is other people's money. The 7th from Jupiter is the husband. The 6th from Jupiter is, you know, forgiving and letting bad things of the past go. So Saturn is going to stimulate all those things as it moves through Cancer. How is it going to stimulate those for good or bad, though? And if we go to Cancer in Saturn's Ashtaka Varga, we see that Saturn in transit through Cancer only gives 1 point. Does everyone see that? Okay, which means Saturn through Cancer is going to hurt the children, make the person unforgiving, hurt the husband, and reduce and cause them problems with other people's money. So it'll be a very unfavorable transit. Okay. So does everyone get the idea? No? Okay, let's take another example. Let's take Venus. And one of the most important things about Venus is relationships, right? You know, so the 7th from Venus is the spouse. And if we go to Venus's, we're on that big Ashtaka Varga transit places pop up. If we go to Venus, let's see where we find the 7th from Venus. And we find that the 7th from Venus falls under Aries, right? Okay, I just go to Venus and I look to where I see 7 in its row. Yep, you see it?
Is there the number 2, 3, 4, and 7?
Yep. So that means Aries is going to stimulate the 2nd from Venus, the 3rd from Venus, the 4th from Venus, and the 7th from Venus. And if I was considering about relationships, the 7th from Venus would be something I'd be looking for, right?
Yes.
Okay. So I find that's in Aries. So that lets me know that any planet transiting Aries is going to have an effect on relationships, on the spouse.
And how did you get the 7th?
Because Venus is the spouse, and the 7th from Venus is the spouse, right?
Okay, but when I'm on, I left click on Venus.
No, just right click on your screen.
Okay, and I've got Ashtag of Argus transit places.
Yeah, and go to Venus. And if you're concerned with relationships, the 7th from Venus is going to be really important, right? Because Venus is relationships, and the 7th house is relationships. Therefore, the 7th from Venus governs your relationships.
Well, when I right-click, I get the sensitive rashis for Balmas. Is that where I'm supposed to be?
Yep. And under Venus's row, where do you find the 7th Balma?
I don't see Venus's row. That's the problem.
Sure. On the left, You'll get the rows of all the planets, Sun through Saturn.
And, okay.
And then you find 7.
Okay. And what if there was no 7?
There's always a 7, because that's the 7th from Venus. So what this table lets us see is which bhavas are stimulated by which signs. The 2nd, 3rd, 4th, and 7th from Venus are sensitive to Aries. Okay, then if we continue moving across the table, the 1st and 8th from Venus are sensitive to Virgo. And then we keep moving across, the 5th, 10th, 11th, and 12th from Venus are sensitive to Scorpio.
Oh, okay.
And the 6th and 9th from Venus are sensitive to Capricorn. Does that make sense?
More sense, yes. Thank you.
Okay, so this table at a glance lets us see. Take any planet, see what sign he's in, and through that, we can find out what sensitive things he's doing, what things he's making happen. So if Saturn's in Aries, or Jupiter's in Aries, or Venus is in Aries, whatever planet's in Aries is going to stimulate the 2nd, 3rd, 4th, and 7th from Aries, from Venus, and the 6th from Saturn. And then based on the basics, you have to determine what is the 2nd from Venus. Well, the 2nd from Venus is healthy, nourishing food. So planets in transiting Aries will have an effect on this person's food. The 4th from Venus is things like swimming pools and also art. So any planet transiting through Aries, furnishings, luxuries that you put in your home. So any planet transiting Aries is going to have an effect on this person's luxuries in their home.
When I right clicking them, those two global charts and the rashis for the bhavas and the other one below that is sensitive nakshatra for the bhavas.
Yeah.
So the top one, the numbers, those numbers represent the bhava number with respect to lagna.
No, it represents the bhava with respect from that karaka. So we're looking at the 2nd, 3rd, 4th, and 7th from Venus.
Okay. So they don't have to do with the top row, it has from Aries to Pisces, all those rashis.
Yeah.
So, for example, if these days Saturn is transiting through Cancer.
Yeah.
And then whatever number is there, that represents with respect to where Saturn is transiting.
So that represents a sensitive the bhava that Saturn's going to be stimulating as it transits through Cancer. But not the bhava from the lagna, the bhava from the karaka. So in Cancer, Saturn's going to affect the 2nd, 8th, and 12th from the Sun. Okay. So going back to Aries, any planet in Aries is going to trigger the 2nd, 3rd, and 4th, and 7th from Venus. So you have to put together what you know about Karakas and Bhavas and find out where they come together. So we know that Venus rules relationships, and the 7th house rules relationships. Therefore, we have to look at the 7th from Venus for relationships. We know that Venus rules furnishings, and that the 4th house rules furnishings. Therefore, the 4th from Venus rules furnishings. 2nd house rules tasty good food. Venus rules tasty good food. Therefore, the 2nd from Venus rules tasty good food. So, yep. Exactly. You could use that list.
But there's not, and on some of the planets, they don't have a karaka for every bhava.
It's just not written down. Every planet is a karaka for every bhava, but lots of times it's not that significant.
Is there a list that we have that has that?
You've got a list that has a lot of them, but no list has ever been compiled that has all of them. Okay. So, you just have to go with what you know. The main things that you're going to care about are going to be the bread and butter things, which you know all the bhavas and karakas for, right?
Right.
The 10th from the sun status, right? 2nd for Jupiter for wealth. 7th for Venus for relationships. 9th from Venus for marriage. 2nd for Jupiter for wealth. 5th from Jupiter for children. 11th for Jupiter for income. 4th for house for real estate. 4th from the moon for mother. 9th from the sun for father. So those are the ones that anyone's going to care to know about, right? But those are the big ones. So just concentrate on the big ones, and as you do more astrology, you'll continue to learn more and more karaka shifts, but you'll never run out. You'll never learn them all. Okay?
The 3rd or the 4th house for automobiles?
4th house is vehicles. So you're right, Venus, the 4th from Venus also has to do with automobiles.
So it doesn't matter which planet right click on and do the transit. You come up with the same.
Yeah, this just means any planet transiting Aries is going to stimulate these bhavas from Venus. Well, there's little different tables. If you click on Venus's table, it just shows you what sign stimulates which house, right? But only the houses from Venus. This table shows us all the houses from all the planets at a glance. There's really no point to use the other table.
Okay.
This is the table to use.
And this table will pop up no matter where I click it.
Exactly. This table pops up on any screen, anywhere you want to go.
Okay.
And it's always the same. Good question.
Thank you.
Because this table is kind of like a compilation of all the little tables.
Okay,
go ahead.
Which one is for buying a home in the astral?
Well, home is 4th from Mars, right? Real estate is 4th from Mars.
4th from Mars.
Okay. Yeah? Exactly. Then we have to find out how good or bad that transit will be, right?
And we go back to that other screen to see how many points whatever the transiting
has. Yeah. So just make sure everyone else gets the idea. So if we see Saturn in Aries, we know it's going to have an effect on their relationship because it's influencing the 7th from Venus. It'll limit their destiny in their relationship.
Okay.
because that's what Saturn does. It limits our destiny options and forces our destiny upon us. If we go to Saturn's Ashtaka Varga on the bottom left of the screen, we'll see in Aries, Saturn gets 4 points. Okay? So Saturn's going to be so-so there as it structures their relationship destiny. Okay? You mean there'll be some elements of suffering, but not undue terrible suffering. So it'll be so-so for that point. Okay? And Saturn, like I said, will always tend to cause us some, you know, some stress revolving around that thing. So it'll cause some stress revolving around their relationship as it transits through Aries there.
But would you predict marriage if Saturn had like 8 points?
If Saturn had more than 4 points, yes, you could say that Saturn's going to get them onto a marriage. If it has less than 5, more often than not, Saturn will end a relationship. So in this case, with 4 points, I'd say Saturn would tend to more likely end a relationship as it goes through Aries. But if it has more than 5 or more, it'll tend to be more auspicious through that sign and force that thing upon them. And it of course, with Saturn, everything is always, anything that Saturn gives us, we accept with some reservation or some lack. But we may accept it anyway, you know?
So when Saturn goes through Capricorn and there's a number 7 underneath there in the Saturn column, what does that indicate?
Okay, I don't see a 7 under Capricorn. But if there was a 7, that would mean any of the...
I mean in the transit, sensitive Rashi to Bhavas.
Oh, okay. Under Saturn, you got a 7. That means, under Capricorn, okay, that means planets transiting Capricorn are going to have an effect on the 7th from Saturn.
But the 7th from Saturn, isn't that relevant because it's not, only the 7th from Venus really has to do with
relationship. Yeah, so 7th from Saturn, what does 7th from Saturn have to do with?
I have no idea.
Yeah, you don't know, so you won't use that one until you can figure out what that means. But Saturn represents distance, right? And the 7th house are things that are far away. So the 7th from Saturn takes us far away from certain things. So the 7th from, as transits move to the 7th from Saturn, they would be very sensitive to, somehow distancing that person from certain things.
Can you go through, like, okay, Aries, we're looking at Aries right now, and so if we went through all the planets, like the Sun gives 5, the Moon gives 4, the 4, 6, 4, you go through there. So, like, the 4s, in general, you could, I don't want to say ignore, but you just say, okay, it's not going to be bad, it's not going to be good, it's going to be okay. So would you just kind of pay more attention to the 5s and above than whatever that planet...
Yeah, you'll get more drastic things with the 5s and above and the 3s and below.
So the sun is a 5 in Aries.
Yeah.
So when the sun transits Aries, it's going
to
what?
When the sun transits Aries, it's very much going to be a month where romance could kick in or they could get married or something, right? It makes it better, more favorable, more desirable.
Okay,
now...
How it gives it is just the quality of that planet.
Exactly. Now, how it gives us is the quality of that planet. Now, one exception to that is that the sun, the transiting through that sign, is almost always the month that event will take place. Okay, so it helps us time the month. So the sun is like the month on the clock. So the month when the sun's in Aries would likely be a time where the person would meet a significant other because Aries assimilates the 7th from Venus. How good that meeting's going to be is going to be indicated by how much points the sun gets through Aries. How compatible they're going to be with that person will be based on how many points the sun gets as it transits through Aries. Okay, but the sun is almost always a timing thing, you know, on this system. It times something to the month. Okay, now the let's see, the moon also you can use in transit. You can use for timing it down to a day or two, because the moon takes 2.5 days to move through a sign, right? So anytime the moon moves through Aries, that'll stimulate a relationship experience for this person. It'll time a relationship experience. Now, how good is that relationship experience going to be? When we look and we see under Aries, we get the moon gives 4 points, right?
Right.
So moon going through Aries will bring about an average relationship experience whenever it transits through Aries.
Right.
Okay? Then Jupiter is also important for timing. Jupiter, the Sun, and Moon are all planets of timing in Vedic astrology. Jupiter indicates the year that an event could happen. You know, there's a calendar based on Jupiter's movement. So the year of, you know, when Jupiter takes about 1 year in a sign, it's a little bit less, but approximately 1 year in that sign, that will also be that. So anytime Jupiter's in Aries, it doesn't matter how low or high his point, that could be a year of important relationship activity, but it will be as good of a year for relationship activity as is the points that Jupiter gives in Aries. So Jupiter in Aries gives 4 points. So Jupiter in Aries will be a year of average relationship activity, but it'll be an important year, meaning, you know, it's where something gets generated, something happens. So those three planets, Jupiter, Sun, Moon, give the year, the month, and the day or two that the event happens. Okay? How good the event is based on how many points those planets are giving in that sign. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Could you continue that down and give it to the hour
with the lagna? The lagna would be the 2-hour period.
So that would actually, that could help you rectify a birth sign. Like if you had continually stuff happening in Taurus or Pisces that should have been happening in Aries, you could figure they were born a little earlier or later.
Well, possibly, because changing the lagna by one sign in the birth chart will change the Ashtakavarga of all the planets, right? So you have to look at the whole picture again. So those are the transits, Jupiter, Sun, and Moon, that are most important for timing something. Then timing something coming into our life. Saturn is the most important planet for timing when something leaves our life. So anytime Saturn transits one of these sensitive points, there's a possibility of us losing that thing. Okay? Or making some fate determined changes in respect to that thing. But how smooth it is, how good it is for us, and so on will be indicated by the point that Saturn has in that sign. Okay? Now, one very important thing is that we need to cover next. Is everyone clear on everything so far?
Yeah.
Okay. And while you start out, concentrate on those planets, Saturn, Jupiter, Sun, and Moon. After you're doing well with those planets, you can throw in the other ones. Mars, of course, indicates the time where we struggle and fight for something. So when Mars is in the sensitive second house from Jupiter, it's when we're fighting for wealth, it's when we're determined to fight and get more wealth. Venus is always healing, relaxing, and enjoying. So whenever Venus is in a particular sign, we're going to heal, relax, enjoy, get nourished. How much are we going to get nourished? It depends on how many points Venus has. Mercury transiting through a sign will always be a time where we try to improve upon that thing. It won't time giving that thing. It's always a time of trying to improve upon it, to make it more accessible, to improve our skills and our abilities with respect to that thing. So Venus going to the second house of Jupiter would be a time of trying to improve upon our finances. Maybe that means more advertising, you know, doing something to help augment that thing and make it more abundant or more beneficial somehow. How well we're able to do that is based on how many points Mercury has transiting through that sign. Who else is there? That's all of them, right?
Lagna.
Oh, the Lagna is for timing the two-hour period. Okay.
What's that Sarva?
Sarva we won't even talk about today.
Okay.
The important thing is, not only does the sign in question is a sensitive point, but in transits, the trines are also equally important. So in Jupiter's Ashtaka Varga, when we saw that Taurus was sensitive for the second bhava, that means that the trine signs to Taurus are also sensitive points for the second from Jupiter. So any planet transiting not only Taurus, but Virgo or Capricorn will also be stimulating to wealth. So for each bhava, you actually have three rashis that can stimulate that bhava. Okay? So for this person, any planet transiting through Taurus, Capricorn, or Virgo will stimulate their wealth. Does everyone understand that? Yes, no, maybe? And you're going to find in every and all transit technique in Vedic astrology, trines and conjunctions are what are important. So, the same in Ashtaka Varga. Taurus is sensitive to the second house from Jupiter and therefore has a say on wealth when a planet transits Taurus. The trines from Taurus are Capricorn and Virgo, therefore they'll be equally sensitive to wealth, to influencing wealth when a planet moves through them. Okay, and that's a very important thing. The reason it's important is because Saturn is going to put a scrunch on our wealth and make us buckle down in how we manage our finances when he's influencing or transiting through the sensitive house, that's the second from Jupiter, which is Taurus. But he's also going to do the same thing through Virgo, and it's going to do the same thing to Capricorn. Now, in Taurus, Saturn gets 3 points. In Virgo, Saturn gives 4 points. And in Capricorn, Saturn gives 2 points. So when Saturn's in Capricorn, he's going to make the person scrunch down, budget his finances the most, because it only gives 2 points. In Virgo, Saturn gives 4 points. So he has to budget his wealth and consider his finances a little more, you know, cautiously, but only so-so, not that much as he does when he transits through Capricorn. So even though a planet, there's 3 signs that will stimulate each house, each sign will stimulate that house differently. So if we go to Venus, and we see the 7th from Venus is Aries, right? That means whenever Jupiter's in Aries, a relationship could start, because Jupiter times the year. But also, anytime Jupiter's in Sagittarius, and anytime Jupiter is in Sagittarius or Leo, any of the fire signs, the trine signs to Aries, relationship will be an important year for relationship. And if we go to Jupiter's Ashtaka Varga, we see Aries gives 4 points, Leo gives 6 points, and Sagittarius gives 6 points. So the relationship started under the 6 points, under Leo or Sagittarius, will be more auspicious than the relationship, and there'll be more compatibility than the relationship that starts under when Jupiter's in Aries, which will just be a so-so relationship, versus the one in Leo or Sagittarius, which will be great. Does everyone understand that? That you have to use the trines the very same way? What?
Yeah.
Okay.
I've got a quick question.
it's going to run through all of the sensitive points that you can. Jupiter's going to go through it and just call you.
Yeah.
How do you apply dashes to this?
Okay. If you want to apply dashas, look at the transiting dasha lords and emphasize them. So where your maha dasha lord is in transit, treat that sort of like Jupiter. Wherever that maha dasha lord is in transit will be a more significant thing that's getting stimulated. So if your maha dasha lord is transiting through the wealth house, the second from Jupiter, stimulating that, that will be more significant for your wealth during that time that he's transiting through that house. And how good will he be? We'll always look at the number of that of the dasha lord. Yep, definitely. Always apply the trines anytime you use transit. And really the best way to get us used to this system, to get a feel for it, is take your own chart and take your sun's Ashtakavarga. And, or not your sun's Ashtakavarga. Take your own chart and pop up the Ashtakavarga transit places. That's the only one I use. I don't look at the individual sensitive transit points in each individual chart. It's much easier just to see them all at once. So, let's say you could simply look at the transits of your sun and take like your wealth or something, or take career, take the sun and the tenth from the sun, let's say. The tenth from the sun in this person's chart is Pisces, which means whenever the sun's in Pisces, it'll be a timing period for a career or status for them somehow. And of course, if their horoscope is indicating a rising career, it'll be more important than if their dashas don't indicate a rising career. But anytime that sun goes through Pisces for this person, there's going to be some room for success and status and power in whatever work they do. But it'll also do it when it's not only in Pisces, but Scorpio or Cancer, the two trine signs. So then look at the sun, and we see that Cancer gives 4 points, Scorpio gives 3 points, and Pisces gives 6 points. So the sun through all those signs can indicate times of success and power, through Pisces there will be more success and power. And just see how that works out in your chart. Then take the moon and take like the fourth from the moon, which is the mother. And see when the sun, the month that the sun influences that fourth from the moon. In this chart, the fourth from the moon is Scorpio. So when the sun's in Scorpio, or the trine signs Pisces or Cancer for this person, those would be more significant months dealing with the mother. And then see how that works out. Just go through that your chart and watch the transits of the sun and just see how the sun itself is stimulating these different things. Because the sun, like I said, is always the month that something is likely to happen. Yes, but the Pisces is the sensitive point to the tenth from the sun. Right? So planets through Pisces stimulate the tenth from the sun, which is Aquarius, because of all that math that we did with the yoga pinda. So all these houses are not that house from the sun. It's the sensitive house relevant to that house from the sun. The sensitive sign that stimulates that house from the sun. So Pisces stimulates the 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, 10th, and 11th from the sun. Okay?
Looking at Mercury, it's got, looks like a full house there. It's got all of the houses.
Yeah, that'll happen sometimes. Meaning that house and the trines are going to be significant transit places for Mercury. And again, the things that get stimulated the most are going to be the things that are in the context of the dasha. So if their dasha says that they're going to be working on their relationship when Mercury goes through that sign that's stimulating everything through Pisces there, then if the dasha says relationships, it'll be more relationships. If the dasha says money, it'll be more money. So that's how you read the dashas first to get an idea of what's happening, and then use the transit to focus that a little bit more. Yeah, those are definitely not the best houses to research and learn this technique with. Yeah, you bet. Yeah, it'd be a busier period, uh-huh. So that's basically the system of predicting with Ashtaka Varga. And, you know, like I said, the sun shows the month, and there'll be ups and downs within the month. The moon shows the 2.5-day period, and there'll be up and downs within that 2.5 days. Jupiter shows the year, and there'll be ups and downs within that year. And Ashtaka Varga teaches us how to find all those ups and downs, too. But that's, we don't need to bother with doing that until we learn the basic technique, which is what you all learned today. Ninth from Venus. Jupiter. Ninth from Venus. For man and woman both. Okay, any questions then? Yeah, and that helps us find the ups and downs within that period that we just figured out.
So if you're looking at, say, the sun, uh-huh. You would have to look at at the beginning of
3 degrees and 45 minutes. Uh-huh. Yep.
So that would probably be a relatively auspicious time.
That would be one of the up times within that sun transit. Yep.
So then the next three and a half or so days after that
would be a downtime.
But I think it'd be a bit of a
downer.
And then it's
yep.
Up to Mars and down for the next few days.
Yep. And with that, you can derive a tremendous amount of detail. Based on the Karaka shifts of where it's up and down from the other planet. But that's going to be too involved to get into. But yeah, you got the basic idea and you can work it out. Okay, so that's Ashtaka Varga, you know, with the signs. And it's pretty handy technique and can be fun to use. So play with it and see what you come up with. And have fun with it, I guess. Any other questions? Otherwise, we'll just sign off. Now, maybe one thing I'll mention, but I don't want to get into it because we're really out of time and I'm getting sleepy here, is we do the same thing for the nakshatras, where we take the point from the planet's house and we multiply it times the yoga pinda. But instead of dividing it by 12, we divide it by 27, the number of nakshatras. And there we find a sensitive nakshatra, which is what's on the bottom of the table. And so we find a sensitive nakshatra for that bhava. And that's the very same thing as the sensitive Rashi. It's just the planet in that nakshatra versus the planet in that Rashi. So once you get a feel of the Rashis, you can go on and look at the sensitive nakshatras as well. Okay?
But we don't, looking at it as a quick survey, it doesn't look like the signs and the nakshatras
No, it's completely different. So you're going to have the nakshatra and the sign, and they'll be different in most cases.
So if you did find a situation where both the sign and the nakshatra were activated, that would be a specially sensitive
point? Well, you could say that, uh-huh.
And aren't about counting the sensitive nakshatras as a power?
Uh-huh.
Where does the
Yes. What is a Shwiti? All the way on. Yep. Where the bhava is from the karaka. And the same here, in the sense of nakshatras for the bhavas, the number you see written down is the number from the karaka. So in Ashwini, we get the second, third, and eighth from the moon. So two, that means a planet in Ashwini stimulate the second, third, and eighth from the moon. Okay. A planet transiting through a Shwini nakshatra stimulates the second, third, and eighth from the moon. Yeah. And one other quick point before we sign off. The classical texts tell us to check the eighth from Saturn. So if we look at this person's chart and we find the eighth from Saturn is Scorpio, right? The eighth from Saturn has to do with your own physical well-being, your own health, you know, and possible abilities of death. So when Saturn's transiting Scorpio for this person, that could be difficult for their health, their longevity, and physical well-being. Or when it transits Cancer or Pisces, the trine. So always look at the eighth from Saturn and find out what sign that is. So this person has got Cancer, 1 point, Scorpio, 4 points, Pisces, 4 points. Cancer is going to stimulate that eighth house, so there's a good chance that this person will die or have medical or have health problems when Saturn's in Cancer, as well as in Pisces and Scorpio. But since Saturn only gives 1 point in Cancer, things could be real bad when Saturn's in Cancer. So look at the eighth house from Saturn to see things that could threaten their longevity. Okay? It's from the karaka. With Ashtakavarga, we're always counting from the karaka.
Okay, and then also, you were going to, I think, what is that sarva where it has all those
nuts? No, we're not going to deal with the sarva. Oh. Yeah, don't worry about the sarva.
And will this also work with classical?
Well, that's one of the nice things about this technique is that it's a much more cut and dry technique. And it's a technique where a little ayanamsha difference won't usually make a big difference, right? Because if your two planets are off a degree or two, as long as they all stay in the same signs and the lagna doesn't change, you're going to have the same Ashtakavarga. So this is a good technique to test the different zodiacs to see which zodiac gives better results. It is a good technique for that because it's a more cut and dried, mathematically centered technique. So you can play around with it and see what you feel. Okay, so have fun playing with that. And but one thing I will tell you, lots of presidents, if we take the tropical zodiac on presidents, lots of presidents get elected when Scorpio, which is where the sun is during election time in tropical astrology, when Scorpio is stimulating their 10th from the sun. So Bush's 10th from the sun is stimulated by Scorpio. And Clinton's 10th from the sun is stimulated by Scorpio tropically. And, of course, they were both elected into office when the sun was in Scorpio. I was actually playing around. Like I said, I've been researching techniques with the tropical and sidereal zodiac both. And I do remember those two examples where the 10th from the sun was lit up in both their charts upon their election, which is what we would expect by the sun. The sun was in there. So it's a good technique to test any type of calculation things. If you're checking ayanamshas and one ayanamsha changes a planetary position from Aries to Taurus, that'll change the Ashtakavarga a lot. And it'll change the yoga pinda of all the planets. And if it changes the yoga pinda, it's going to change all the sensitive rashis. So then you could really easily just take the transit of the sun and see if which ayanamsha gives better results. So I think lots of ways, testing this with testing ayanamshas, zodiacs with Ashtakavargas, a little more sane than trying to do it with dashas, which can get really painful lots of times. And really the thing to do would be to program all this stuff and then run a batch of charts, a huge batch of charts with different INMs with different zodiacs, and statistically see which ones consistently give the best results. And since Ashtaka Varga is only part of the picture, it's not the whole astrological picture, you know, we've got the other part of the picture. So it's not going to show every time a person comes to power, they're not going to necessarily have the sun stimulating the tenth from the sun. Because it's not showing, it's not the whole picture, it's a part of the picture. But if we take times where people come to power, and if more consistently this item show, this zodiac is showing the tenth from the sun being stimulated by the sun, then that's going to very well most likely be the more accurate calculation to use. So it's a good thing to test with, I think, for sure. I've been wanting to program this for years. I got this stuff all together 5 years ago. I wanted to program it in the 2001 Kala. But I just didn't have time, so I was finishing up my book, and then we went and taught in Germany. So it just didn't get done until now. But this is a technique I wanted to get programmed in a handy fashion. I used to do all these yoga pinda calculations by hand in the old days. And lots of times it really saved me, where I would use the transit of the moon to trigger a relationship that wouldn't have been, the day wouldn't have been indicated by other transits. It was just indicated by that moon going through a certain sign. So that's a handy technique. So play with it and have fun with it and research it if you're research-minded, and it'll be a good technique. Okay, and there's more to Ashtaka Varga. At some point we'll do the, you know, the 6 to 10 week thing, and you can learn all the subtleties. But this is the bread and butter of it, okay? So any other questions? Otherwise we'll say goodbye. Okay, take care. Bye-bye.